You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Y'all know it's up. It's time for the Trip for Foot Project Podcast. Triple P, once again on the airwaves, Eddie Greer, the third, a.k.a. EG3, for this K-State podcast. We're all about the latest in what's happening in Kansas State athletics and also what's going around in the community of the Little Apple in Manhattan, Kansas. Of course, I'm recording here in Manhattan, Kansas. A current resident of the Little Apple. And of course, before we bring our co-host in, the Purple Project Podcast is now a part of radio.com, the latest, and wherever you can find this podcast. Obviously you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, SoundCloud. I uploaded a couple of the episodes yesterday, and now the iHeartRadio, we're on there, and the latest movement, radio.com, the Purple Project Podcast is on that as well. So the first 8 episodes of the Purple Project Podcast right there for you guys if you're needing more K-State content. We got another good show on tap. With that, let's go ahead and bring in my co-host as usual for the Purple Project Podcast. Living out there in San Diego, none other than AA, Alex, what's going on before Independence Day? What's going on, buddy?
Man, I'm taking it easy, Eddie. I hope all is well with you. Fortunate enough, we're recording this on a Friday, and we're fortunate enough to be on board today, so I'm going to spend it with the family. I'm actually recording this from my parents' house, and it's going to be my parents and I and my brother and his girlfriend. We're all going to get together for this long weekend and have some good family time. So we're excited for that. I wish everybody out there, even once they listen to this, it'll be post 4th of July. So I guess I hope everybody had a good 4th of July. That's when they'll be here again.
Yep, that is right. Yep, it'll be post 4th of July next week, obviously. But yep, always good to have that family time, so to you and yours, so a late happy 4th of July, pretty much, basically, from, yep, thank you very much. Yeah, so let's go ahead and dive on in. Well, obviously, here first, so apparently, the mask situation, before we talk K-State here, obviously, the mask situation, not sitting very well with some people, including my wife included in that. I'm not happy about it either, obviously, for those of you who are not up to speed with what's going on with at least that situation. Governor Laura Kelly issued apparently a statewide mandatory about wearing a mask, and it's funny because half of the counties here in the state of Kansas have rebuked even including Laura Kelly's own county of not wearing a mask. And unfortunately here, we gotta put on a mask. We gotta put on a mask wherever we go to grocery stores or whatnot. That, well, it is what it is, but some people that I know are not happy with this movement. And of course, and obviously, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this too much, because it's already been documented here on this podcast already, this COVID-19 and everything else, and everybody has been super effective. And this was not on the rundown sheet, Alex, but I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it now. One of the more, I did not go to this restaurant. Now, I went to their deli, and I was not happy when their deli closed, but Harry's, Alex, Harry's will be no more here after another month and a half. I don't know what the exact date is, but they're pretty sad that all these pretty good restaurants, including some small businesses, have been having to shut down. And now add Harry's to the unfortunate list of restaurants / businesses that will not reopen.
I gotta say, Eddie, I did hear the Harry's news, and it broke my little heart, because Harry's was my favorite restaurant in Manhattan, hands down. I was, oh my gosh, so Harry's, just to give you a little context, Eddie, when I was visiting K-Steaks, I think that's when I was introduced to Harry's, actually, and then got to eat there, obviously, right before I moved in. I ate there a handful of times throughout my time at K-State, specifically when I would have any family or friends in town, because I'd want to, you know, show off Harry's, because I loved Harry's. They had great food, the band would come in a lot of times the night before football games, and they'd perform, and it was just a great atmosphere. Then I actually had my graduation dinner there with my entire family when I graduated from K-State that night. And so that was obviously a very special night, memory that I'll have with me forever. That was there at Harry's. So the news of Harry's closing, it sucked, Eddie. I mean, that's all it was. It really bummed me out. Because you're right, that is a restaurant that is so popular in Manhattan. It makes you start to wonder, man, if Harry's can't make it, what place can, right, through all of this? And so that's kind of a scary thought, if you really think about it. So, you know, unfortunately, I won't be able to eat it ever again. That really bummed me out, because I'm out here. So if you live in Manhattan, or you live anywhere near Manhattan, you better take advantage of that jewel before it's gone. I think it's July 17th, Eddie. I believe that was the date for the last day. Get in there before July 17th, everybody. But super sad news. It's a blow. It's a blow to Manhattan. It's just going to stink when I'm back there and driving by and not seeing Harry's there.
Yeah, like I said, I ate the deli, the Harry's Deli, but not the actual restaurant. So unfortunately, I did not get that Harry's dinner specialized experience there. But yeah, that's a scary thought. I mean, one of my favorite restaurants is Bourbon and Baker.
Oh yeah.
So
I love Baker.
Yeah.
Still not that. At least that's still there, and fingers crossed that nothing happens to Bourbon Baker, because that's about what's holding, what I'm kind of putting all my, essentially putting all the chips in on Bourbon Baker now, and hoping that it stays, and then Bourbon Baker can become my new Harry. So if something happens to Bourbon Baker, I don't know what I'll do.
Yeah, so we'll monitor the situation with that here in town, here locally, for the locals here in Manhattan, Kansas. So not very good news. So the transition from that to K-State on campus. Of course, we talked about the racist, the social issues around this world, including right here in our backyard, Manhattan, Kansas. So a little update here real fast from Richard Myers, who tweeted this out earlier this week. Here, the message pretty much summarizes as this: the insensitive comments posted by one K-State student hurts our entire community. These devised statements do not represent for the values of our university. We condemn racism and bigotry in all its forms. And yes, and it continues down here. We are launching, now this was early in the week, we are launching an immediate review of the university's options, Black Lives Matter at K-State. And we will continue to fight for social justice, which is continuing on with that. So the latest on that from at least the local radio station here in town, 1350 K-Man. And from what the rumor is, they're putting things in place so that this stuff does not happen again. Now, I'm still sticking by my original statement from earlier. You missed out on the back-to-back episode this week of the Purple Project Podcast, episode 7 and 8. You might want to go check that out before listening to this one. Very good content, as long as the rest of the episodes. If you missed out on any of the episodes of the Purple Project Podcast, but still sticking with it. But even though that looks like the rumor is, it's not the expel. I mean, that's not the final ruling, but it looks like from what I'm hearing that they're not going to expel the dude. I'm not going to name him because we already talked about him already. Jaden McNeil. There you go. But we've already given him enough attention here on this podcast. And from what a source told me, that he wasn't even going to come back to K-State. That's what somebody told me. So, Alex, you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. And just to chime in a little bit with that. So I would say that this went about as well. We talked a week ago, and I said the administration, they must really be having some serious heartburn right now. They must be this is about as bad of a situation as they could be in, because you know clearly the football team is bringing up legitimate points that need to be addressed. And they're doing, in my opinion, the right thing by the boycott, because as I told you last week, they have leverage and they should use that leverage to try and make K-State a better place. But at the same time, there really wasn't a lot that K-State could do from a legal perspective, and there was a lot of stuff that was just going to be out of their control with what the football team was asking. So K-State did, as you said, they mentioned. They essentially laid out steps for essentially addressing this, and I won't get into all the steps, but just a few of them mentioned essentially offering more scholarships for black students who may not be able to afford K-State initially, to try to give them more of an opportunity on campus, or being able to get into K-State.
Sorry to cut you off. Well, that was still in play when I was going to school.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's one thing that they're trying to offer. They're trying to be more diverse in their hirings. I saw that, you know, they want to be able to hire more black people to positions, whether it is a staff position, whether it's a teacher, a professor, a coach, whoever it might be. And then there's a handful of others, and people can go to their website and see the entire list, because it's a real long list where they break it down into student-related action steps that they're taking, and then they break it down into the faculty-related action steps. So essentially steps they're doing to try to address the student aspects, steps they're taking to try to address the faculty aspects. So essentially this is going to play as their policy. I told you, there wasn't really any way that they could actually implement a policy. This, to me, this reads more of like, here's things we're going to do. This isn't necessarily a policy that we set in stone, but we're going to do these specific things. And it also saw in here, and I'm not exactly sure how this will work, but they are going to hold students, and I don't have it up in front of me, but essentially students will essentially be held to the same standard that staff and faculty is on social media. So it's going to, essentially, it will give them grounds to possibly discipline someone for something that they say on a private Twitter account. I mentioned last week, you know, as frustrating as this is, I don't know what they really could do, because it was on a private Twitter, and it wasn't on school grounds, and it wasn't a part of something that was technically a university organization, so they were really kind of in a tough position there. And K-State mentioned that in their letter that essentially, law, from, you know, looking at our options within the law, we really don't have the authority to expel him. But we're going to put this in place that could possibly allow for discipline if something like this happens again. So that was kind of their way of addressing that. And then ultimately, all the athletes that were boycotting, including the football team, they saw this and they must have thought it was enough, because they acknowledged it in a letter that they released, that, you know, they appreciated the steps the K-State was taking to try to address this, and they were going to resume workouts. Now, they didn't miss any workouts because they're currently suspended because of the coronavirus, but they It was, they essentially, you know, said this is good enough for us for now. However, we will boycott again if we see things starting to go the wrong direction. So the players are back to work. And then something that I thought was what encouraged me is I saw, and I'm actually going to pull this up on my Twitter, because I know Gene Taylor tweeted it out, but they actually hired a, his name is Julian Jones, and he has been added to the senior staff and to serve as the chief diversity officer for K-State Sports. So he's essentially going to lead the continued growth of the diversity and inclusion programming for student athletes, coaches, and staff. So they added that position to try to address those needs in the athletic program. So I thought that was a good step as well. And they signed it was essentially a we will denounce racism. It will show in our actions. And it's signed by everybody. It's signed by the head coaches, cross country, soccer, football, volleyball, track and field, men's golf, every single sport. And all the coaches have signed it, essentially acknowledging that they denounce racism. So I think K-State's done a good job of getting out in front of this. To be 100% honest, I wasn't sure if it would be enough initially to appease the players. And I would have understood if they were like, you know, this isn't enough. You know, we want more. I would have said, you know what, I understand it and I stand with them. But at the same time, I am happy that the university, you know, took the steps to acknowledge it and try to, you know, put some things in place that they want to do in the future to make it a better place. And I'm glad that they were able to have a positive collaboration, the student athletes and the administration. And we can hopefully get back to sports and football, COVID permitting. And be able to do that. Hopefully this can be put in the rearview mirror. Now, not the racial injustice issue in general. You don't want to put that in the rearview mirror. You want to continue to bring awareness to it and do things to make the world a better, more inclusive place. You want to continue that. But this whole Jaden McNeil thing, you want to put that in the rearview mirror, hopefully, and you know, be able to move on to football and making K-State a better university, a more inclusive university, a more diverse university, which... it already is, but continue to take those strides and denounce racism, and then get back to sports, which is what we all want. You know, we all are ready for that sports outlet. I think we're all ready to see K-State sports, and you know, fingers crossed that's you know, we can be able to spend some time you know, talking about that. But you know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with Jaden McNeil. You know, I hope you're right, Eddie. I hope he doesn't come back, to be 100% honest.
Yeah.
There's no place for people like that at K-State.
No.
You know, K-State's about. He doesn't represent K-State and the K-State family.
Nope, he does not. So, yeah, that, so we all hope here in a couple months that football can somewhat get going, whether it's on time or not, and... kind of the transition into that here with what President Myers, Chris Klieman, Gene Taylor, all the coaches have done a nice job with this. They have backed their players. Of course, 100%, Chris Klieman has done a tremendous job.
Amazing. I do want to jump in real quick, Eddie, and mention that. Chris Klieman has done an unbelievable job with this, in my opinion. I don't think he could have done any better. He has jumped out in front. And he has said, I am with this team. I support this team. We are not going to allow for this, and I'm going to stand up. And, man, nothing sends a message to an athlete or an employee or whoever it might be when you see that your boss or your coach, whoever it might be, has your back, and especially on an issue like this. So I think that him doing that and him saying, you know what? This may not be popular within the administration, but I'm staying with my players because these are my players and this is what I believe in. And that sends a message that will resonate through that locker room that he's got on our backs. And that goes so far. It just goes so far. It goes so far in building team trust. It goes so far in building team camaraderie. And it builds, quite frankly, it makes K-State just that much more appealing out on the recruiting trail, because recruits are going to see that and say, that's a coach that's going to have my back. That's a coach that's not going to stand for this, for that, for racism. That's a coach I'm going to play for. So, amazing job by Chris Kleiman. And the entire staff. The entire staff getting out in front of it, for that matter.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
And now, with all that moving, transitioning from that, the football players finally, as of this morning, ended the boycott with the whole social injustice with what happened with George Floyd last week. And now, as of course COVID-19 interrupted summer workouts, voluntary workouts will resume July 13th. That's end of next week, I believe, if I'm not mistaken there. So finally, after what happened with having no players with COVID, all of a sudden, bam, you had 14 player K-State players with the virus, not to be named anyway. We don't even know who got the virus, who didn't. So that's kind of going through my head. I mean, obviously, you know, the coaches, Gene Taylor, they can't give out that information, but that kind of in the back of your mind, you get that there has to be, as a fans, current students, as fans, as current alumni, you have to be warning in the back of your mind who got it. Obviously, you know, football players returning back to campus with it, so that's been going through the back of my mind. But good news on K-State football front, on the gridiron, voluntary workouts will resume July 13th. That's going to be huge for that football team. That's going to help out with the
I want to ask real quick, and I know that this is I don't want to go too far off the path because I know we're about to transition to something else, but I want to ask you something real quick. I saw bounced around by a couple coaches today, including Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. I've seen a handful of Power 5 coaches mention this, but they've said, what if we move the season, the football season, to the spring when there will be a vaccine, when we can get it to, we can get through this coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have the season in the spring. It would just be league games and postseason. It seems like that's starting to gain a little steam. I don't know if that's something that happens or not, but since Lincoln Riley in particular was coming out saying, I think that's a really good idea, I'm kind of curious what you think of that, because I see that getting a little bit of more steam of, oh, maybe we do a spring football season and we just do a, you know, the conference slate and then just do a postseason. Is that something you think would be a good idea?
I think I've been thinking about that as well, Alex, and that's a good thing that you brought that up, because when I first heard about this before the summer hit, I was like, okay, I mean, that'll be a little weird. But as more time I have to think about it, the more time I think about it, the more I'm leaning towards that way. I think that would be a good situation. I mean, obviously, you're not going to play. I mean, you could do it with late fall to the winter, but obviously, we know here, at least here in Manhattan, Kansas, it gets real cold, and it's winter and all that. But yeah, spring to move it from the fall, and then all these rumors about, not just for football, but for baseball, basketball, trying to find that vaccine.
Yeah.
And then trying to get things moved around. Obviously, Major League Baseball is going to be starting up here. Now, we're going to talk about that at the end of this podcast. But, yeah, the more I think about it, the more in position I am to thinking, yeah, heck yeah, let's move it to spring. And I'm definitely down with the conference games. And, I mean, yes, you want to have we have Vanderbilt, non-con. As much as I like to have that, SEC coming to town, Vanderbilt, I mean, they're not very, I mean, the last time we played Vanderbilt, we should have beat them, but that's a whole nother topic. But Vanderbilt, they've been inconsistent in the football, but still, you bring in that SEC name to Manhattan. But you're gonna miss out on that. But league play and postseason play, oh yeah, I'm definitely down for that, because I mean, for I guess for I'm going to go ahead and bring this in or kind of compare a little bit. Major League Baseball, all right, right? My team's the Braves, right? And they're getting the team situated, right, with the travel distance. So we'll be playing the teams for our division, of course, 10 times, and then we're going to be playing possibly the AL East, the Yankees, Red Sox, Toronto, Tampa Bay, Baltimore. That's all in travel distance, right? So, I mean, for K-State, and K-State's teams, obviously, are within travel distance, except for West Virginia. You're probably going to have to get on the plane and fly. And I listen to a podcast that I listen to on a weekly basis, and it was an Atlanta Braves podcast, and the broadcaster said that, you know, they're going to be sanitizing planes down left and right because, you know, players, they're going to be getting off traveling here and there. They're going to have to hop on a plane every now and then to get to their destination on what team they're playing. So, for the exception of West Virginia, which is northeast, I mean, all these teams now, obviously, this is going to be different schedule because you're going to have to go to Texas comes here. You're gonna have to go. You don't have to go to Lubbock. I don't have a schedule in front of me now. Kansas, well, they're gonna be coming here. Let's see the team that we're gonna be going to Norman this year. But I mean, yes, I think that's I like that. The more I think about it, the more I'm in favor of that because yeah, you're gonna have cupcake teams. No offense to Buffalo or the other team that's on there, but I mean, yeah, league play matters. It definitely matters, and that's more, you want to focus more on conference play because you want to get off to a good start. You do not want to get off to a slow start, especially if you take away the non-con games and just focus, go straight into Big 12 play. So you have to get off to a fast start, or otherwise you're going to be in the hole early.
You would. I got to say, I'm kind of split on it to be. Because I'm one part of me is like, man, like if we can make this work in the fall, like let's just make it work. Because I need football in the fall. I need it. So that part of me is like, oh my gosh, no, make it work. But then the other part of me is like, well, you know, you don't want to lose a season and not get a season. And if this is the best way to get the season, doing it in the spring, then that's what we got to do. So I think the way where I stand on this is I'm still in favor of trying to get it in where it currently is. But if it becomes apparent, if the logistics get too complicated, things get too wonky, and the season begins to look unrecognizable, then or say that there are just so many players out that you're compromising essentially what you're putting on the field. You know, I think that at that point, then it does make sense to do a spring schedule, and so I think that there's a lot of parts of that that make sense. Where you could run into a hurdle if you would have nearly no off season going into the next season, which is what the NBA is facing right now with starting their season back up. They're going to have like a 2-month off season, and then off they go again. So you know, the college football will have to deal with that somewhere. But I think it's an interesting idea. I will say this. If they play in the spring, and if they have a vaccine and they have a treatment and things like that, which we're assuming they will, but we don't know. But assuming they have those things by the spring, I would still want the non-con games personally because I still want the Vanderbilt game at home. Because I think that's big for K-State to get an SEC team at home. You know, Buffalo and the other games should be wins. I can't remember who the other one is.
Sorry to cut you off again real quick, but I just pulled up the schedule, and the other team is North Dakota.
That's right, yes. So, yeah, I would like to get North Dakota and Buffalo in because, you know, I'll be honest, I like an easy win. I like an easy win. I would like to get them. I'd like to get the SEC school, and I know it's Vanderbilt, but I'd still like to get them into Manhattan because it's not very often that K-State gets to face an SEC team in Manhattan. The last time was Auburn in 2015.
Yep.
So I think that that's a good opportunity for them there. So I'm fine with the season in the spring, but I would like to find a way to do non-con if you can, because I understand shortening the season to try to make the off season a little longer. But on the flip side of that, if the coronavirus is under control with vaccine treatments, there's really not an excuse at the same time to say, well, you know, well, the travel's not going to work because of this and that. Well, no, COVID's better. So, you know, you can make the travel work. I think the issue, like I said, would be with if that season was 3 weeks longer or 4 weeks longer, then all of a sudden you're cutting a month out of your offseason. And I think that's where they're like, well, I don't know how that would go. So this is going to be something interesting to watch. I'm very curious to see what happens because there is so much up in the air on when, if football's played.
Mm.
There's the plans in place for baseball. There's the plans in place for the MLB. There's plans in place for other sports. But football's a different beast. Playing football through COVID, through the coronavirus is a totally different beast. You're dealing with bigger rosters. You're dealing with more contact. You can't put these players in bubbles, especially in college when you're going to be on a campus.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
So it's interesting to watch, but it's nice to hear that they're trying to think of some contingency plans to get around this and still find a way to get the season in.
And I also kind of agree with you on that sense of let's still try to get the football season in the fall because everybody's going to be hungry to get some type of football in. If you don't have that, then what are you going to have? I mean, obviously NASCAR is going on and Major League Baseball could be playing, well, obviously. And I bring this up because, obviously K-State is fully intentionally bringing back the students in early August. So you're going to have that to deal with as well as trying to get a football season in. And speaking of which, guess where? Actually, yeah, I have the conference schedule already put up here, so I'm going to say it anyway. So I already said West Virginia. Well, that's our first game, and we're going to have to go to good old West Virginia, Morgantown, originally scheduled for September 26th. Now, that's obviously still up in the air, but that's the first conference game for K-State if, you know, we were to skip all the non-con, but I'm on the board with you with Vanderbilt. I still want to play them here, right here in Manhattan, Kansas, because that you need the money right now.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
true.
You need the money right now because I mean, you lost out all this money between we know what happened with the NCAA tournament, the Big 12 tournament, where K-State advanced after beating TCU. The baseball team had a good season before it shut it down because of COVID-19. So you need that revenue. And we talked about it on this podcast. I mean, football is the moneymaker here in Manhattan. And the way that Chris Kleiman, what he's done, you already mentioned it already here tonight on this podcast. We talked about it already. Really kind of like every episode of this podcast. But yeah, I mean, you need that type of opponent coming in here now. No offense to Buffalo or North Dakota, but yeah, I'd rather have Vanderbilt on there. Start your season off with a good, a tough opponent, and then you're kind of warmed up for your conference schedule.
Yeah, and just the final thing with it, too, is the one of the reasons I think that we talk about this is money. Everyone's probably like, why are Eddie and Alex always talking about money? We're talking about money because this is a legitimate concern with everything that's going on. But the thing is, what you risk if you do the spring, if you're like, you know what, we're going to do the spring, if you commit to that right now, you risk possibly losing a season and giving yourself a smaller window because while we expect, yes, we are optimistic. People are optimistic right now there will be a vaccine ready by the end of this year, the beginning of next year, and they're optimistic that there may be treatments available in those time frames or not, but we don't know.
Yeah.
It's not certain.
Yeah.
And if it happens to where, you know what, this is going to be around through the spring of 2021, well, then you did lose a football season. If you say, we're just going to do it in the spring because this is what the experts are saying, and then you get to spring and you're like, oh, crap, it's still here. And we can't get a season in. Well, you just lost the whole season of money from a football season.
Uh-huh.
So that is a bad scenario. So that's one big reason why I think that they need to try to get it in the fall if they can. Because if they can't get it in the fall, then they still have that spring opportunity to try to get it in. For them, I think you just get it in any way you can. To be 100% honest, you know, if
you know, that's why I think you try in the fall. If you can't get it in the fall, then you know you push it to the spring, and then that becomes your contingency plan, and then you go from there. But you know, you want to give yourself as much wiggle room as possible because you want to do everything you can to try to get a season in. Because as you mentioned, if you didn't get a season, that's millions and millions of dollars lost, and that's positions that are cut, and that's possibly different to athletic programs that are cut, and it could really, you know, lead to some bad repercussions. So, but it's interesting. Maybe football in the spring. I don't know. We'll have to see.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden from San Diego, California, calling out there. The Purple Project Podcast rolls on this Friday night, July 3rd, 2020. And because of this, I got the day off for... Sorry to get off track here, but got the day off because July 4th runs on a Saturday, apparently. So my days are going to be mixed up because I think today is Saturday night. But, yeah, so tonight's Friday night.
Your days mixed up, Eddie.
What was it? Sorry.
We were talking, and I was like, what are you talking about, Eddie? I'm available Friday. And I'm like, oh, yes, sir. July 4th on a Saturday. And so I was like, yeah, man, I'm available on a Friday.
Yep, so Friday and tomorrow is the weekend, so start of a three-day weekend. Obviously, this podcast will be out on its normal day on Tuesday. This is another thought before we get to Gene Taylor here, Alex here. I was thinking about that, what you said, you know, moving to spring. You do that now. I mean, of course, if this all comes according to plan, if they find a vaccine and all this other mumbo-jumbo, you move it, the football season to spring, you're going to be dealing with basketball.
Yep.
And possibly in NCAA tournament and the possible start of baseball, too. So you're going to have three major sports in session going. Basketball's going to be coming to the end of theirs season and possibly postseason, well, continuing through the postseason. Football, and this is all just speculating now. We're not saying that it's going to happen, but it could happen, it could not. Now we're just talking about it, thinking out loud. But baseball starts late February, around there. So you're going to have three sports, and not only that, let's just go ahead and throw in track and field in there as well. So you have four sports going on. There's going to be that's a lot of stuff going on and with your major player football right in the smack of it. So you definitely at best situation would love to have it in the fall, but if not, I mean, hey, I'm not complaining about it, but you're going to have a lot of stuff going on right here in K-State land with all the stuff going on. Obviously the basketball team's going to be really young. The baseball team got a little more mojo going, and the football team has some momentum going from last year, even though we lost to Navy in the bowl game. So there's a lot going to happen there. If that were to happen, that's if. But just thinking.
Yeah, and I got to say, you know, there's been rumors as well that basketball pushing college basketball to the spring. I've heard those same rumors. Is football not as strong? I haven't heard them as strong yet as I have football, because basketball's further away. That's probably why. But that's another reason I'm in favor of trying to get football in the fall if possible, because what would end up happening is what you just said. All of a sudden, all your sports are being played at once, and that would look while that is would be great in that one particular moment. That's not necessarily probably the best way. I mean, you want to be able to distribute that stuff out throughout the entire year. You don't want to just have it all at the same time. And then it throws off, as we mentioned, it throws off seasons. And then, you know, there's processes, there's recruiting processes.
Yep.
There's different processes that you got to go through, training processes, things like that. Players may not have enough turnaround to get ready for the next year. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that could happen if you have all that at once. So, I don't think that's what K-State wants. I don't think they want baseball, football, basketball all to be played at the same time in the spring. that could be kind of a headache for them trying to juggle all of that. As a fan, well, that would be great in that moment. I think that you would want that spread out a little more if possible. Mm. Obviously, the health and safety of the student athletes is the most important thing here, and we should do whatever we can to keep them as safe as possible. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but when you're looking at this from a fan perspective and an athletic department perspective, that may just be kind of like an overload for them, and they're trying to do a lot. But look, they may also see the opportunity of saying, well, you know what, we can also have fans in the stands, and that's a lot more money. So, you know,
it's
worth the risk to try to get fans in the stands. So, you know, that would be a lot. That would be a lot to have baseball, football, basketball, all going on in the spring. You know, it might just take, I don't know if it would take away from other sports. I don't know I don't know exactly what it would be like, but hopefully we don't have to figure out, because hopefully we can get football and ball. I mean, that's ultimately what I'm hoping for, is that we can find a way to get a season played in the fall, because there is nothing better than the leaves turning, the temperature dropping, getting crisp outside. It's football weather. It's football weather. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Spring won't be the same as the fall. I mean, you hit on that perfectly. The cooler temps there, the leaves changing, tailgating, all that other stuff. Well, if we're fans, we're gonna tailgate. But just saying, before all this hit, yeah, fans coming together, having a good time before going in the stadium. Now, this is gonna be a perfect transition, because okay, so Gene Taylor. With all the sports going on, Gene Taylor came in. RO came out on him this week. He comes in at number 8 in one of the articles I touched on. It was with Jeff Goodman and Brett McMurphy. They were ranking the top 20 college football 80s in the country, and Gene Taylor comes in 8th now. Number 1, obviously, was in our conference, Oklahoma's Joe Castiglione. I might have got that right. And he was, obviously, he edged, let's see, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So, Gene Smith and Barry Alvarez was 3rd for Wisconsin. Gene Smith from Ohio State. And then I'm just going to go down the top 10 here. So, Central Florida's Danny White, Notre Dame's Jack Swarbrick. And then the back half of this top 10, you have LSU's Scott Woodard come off that national championship season. Oregon's Rob Mullins, then ours truly, Gene Taylor, Virginia Tech's Whit Babcock, and Arizona State's Ray Anderson, and obviously with Joe Castiglione, Oklahoma's number 1, and now for Big 12's sake, Gene Taylor has to come in at number 2 in the Big 12 conference there. So Gene Taylor, for what he's done already, and obviously we have all these projects going on with the south side of the stadium. He's come out with this big plan for, you know, new facilities. We already completed some of those already. And I lost my train of thought for a second. I'll get it back here. Maybe you'll bring it up, Alex. But what have been your thoughts so far of Gene Taylor? Obviously, we talked at the very beginning of the Purple Project podcast, the move to bring Chris Klieman in here. He's kept Bruce Weber, even though they've had a bad season coming off of that. Jeff Mitty's been consistent. And let's not forget some of these other sports here in town, which we're going to talk about here now in the future. Track and field just included their recruiting class, the volleyball team coming off their season, baseball team, as I talked about already multiple times on this podcast, they had a lot of momentum, women's basketball, golf, down the line. What's been your overall thoughts on Gene Taylor so far? Because for me, personally, I mean, this is a guy, for me, he doesn't jump off as this fancy guy that he's going to make something happen right away. I mean, the dude is very, obviously, he's been on multiple podcasts here in K-State. He's very smart, obviously. And so, he's done a nice job so far. With K-State since coming over here. Obviously, he had to replace, I can't think of the name right now. John Curry. Bam, there we go. So, he had to come in here with the John Curry mess and try to sort all that out, and he's done a fabulous job with that. So what are your thoughts on Gene Taylor and him coming in nationally as number 8 and pretty much basically number 2 in the conference?
You know, I think it, more importantly, when you mentioned Gene Taylor, and you know, he's not that flashy. I mean, yeah, the way I picture Gene Taylor is he's like, he's the guy, you know, he comes in every day with a lunch pail and the hard hat, you know, he's ready to go to work. You know, I mean, that is nothing sexy about what he's doing. You know, he's just getting the job done. I mean, it's the complete opposite of what you had with John Curry. John Curry was like the model that was just like that glitzy, glammy model that everybody's just like, oh my gosh, look at her. She just looks so unbelievable. She's just so gorgeous. But then when you dig in deeper, it's like, oh my gosh, she's had 5 affairs. Oh my gosh, she's divorcing him again. Oh my gosh, she has all these issues. Like, you know, if anybody who watches like TMZ or E or anything like that, you know, sees those types of things. Yeah, that was kind of John Curry in the K-State realm. He did these, he raised a ton of money and it looked fantastic. And he began a bunch of these projects and it looked fantastic.
Mm.
But at the same time, he was really building toxic relationships with a lot of coaches and a lot of players and didn't have a lot of support and really kind of put himself, and to be 100% honest, I don't think he was a K-State for K-State. Once again, kind of like the model of maybe working their way up the, you know, up the chain to get to the top. He was just trying to work his way up to an SEC school. And that's how I felt the entire time he was at K-State. And that's what he ended up doing. He ended up going to Tennessee and things absolutely blew up there for him.
Yeah, blew up in his face. Yeah.
He botched that football, their football hire so bad. But Gene Taylor came in, it was the complete opposite. He wasn't anything that was going to be, you know, he came from North Dakota State, and you know, he was a guy that, you know, wasn't a sexy hire by any means, but was someone who came in and you knew what he was going to do. You knew he was going to come in, he was going to go to work, and he was going to, you know, make K-State athletics better than they were the day before. And that's exactly what he's done. He has continued those projects that John Curry started throughout the entire athletic department, programs, many of the different teams. And what he's also done, which is probably why he's number 8, is he had the hire that replaced Bill Snyder. And let's be 100% honest, that was the hire that everyone was wondering, how's it going to go? For many years, from Bill Snyder, he's going to retire at some point. He's going to have to be replaced at some point. You know, is it going to be a clean breakup? Is it going to be a dirty breakup? Who's K-State going to hire? There were so many questions around that. So while Bill Snyder remained, you kind of knew this was going to happen. And you didn't know who the GM was going to be. And then there was rumors that John Curry tried to force Bill Snyder out and get a head coach in waiting and all of this different stuff, and it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Tried to use the boosters in that plan as well. And Gene Taylor just came in and you know, gave Coach Snyder the reins to do what he needed to do with the athletic, with the football team. And once Bill Snyder started to slip, I think a lot of us knew in that final season, Bill Snyder's final season, oh man, I think it's time. He needs to go. If he comes back, this is not going to be very good for K-State football, because this could really lead to some bad ramifications, because he's really getting beat on the recruiting trail. A lot of players are threatening to transfer. He doesn't seem to have the Snyder magic. I mean, how's this going to go? Because Bill Snyder built this program up, so we can't just push him out the door. There was a lot of awkward, how do you handle this? And I thought that Gene Taylor handled that really well. He probably encouraged. I could be incorrect. This is all speculation. I will put that out right now. But I think he encouraged Coach Snyder to retire. Once again, just speculation. Not saying he did it. But either way, it was not an ugly transition. It didn't turn into this ugly, you know, thing where, you know, K-State burned a bridge until Snyder, and that he disowned K-State and this and that, because that was the last thing anyone wanted to happen. So I thought he handled that well, that situation of Bill Snyder retiring. And then next came the hire, and he had to get the hire correct. And there's a lot of rumors on who they got hired. There was the North Texas coach that everybody thought, I think his name was Seth Luttrell, if I recall correctly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he thought that was going to be the hire.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That fell apart, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, Gene, how did you mess that up? And then he hired Chris Kleiman, and everybody's like, who is this guy? What are you hiring him for? Like, this is Bill Snyder we're talking about. Like, you're placing him with a 1AA coach. Are you kidding me? Turns out Chris Kleiman's a pretty good coach. So mm-hmm. He's won a handful of national championships. He knows how to recruit, and he proved that in year one that he's clearly the right man for the job. So it seems like the success is incredibly popular, and so far, 1 year in, very successful. So when you look at those two things, I think that's what Gene Taylor has been graded by. And I think the fact that he handled that entire football situation so well is what's put him on this list in the top 10. I think you have to give credit to him, because that was an incredibly tough situation. It wouldn't be like firing Bruce Weber. If they fired Bruce Weber and, Bruce Weber's like, oh, forget K-State. Screw it. I mean, let's be honest. Do you think K-State would be like, oh my gosh, we need to have Bruce Weber's stamp of approval? I don't think so. Look, I don't have anything against Bruce Weber, but Bill Snyder built that football program. I don't even know if there'd be a football program if it wasn't for him. So, because they were about to get rid of it. So, I mean, that was a situation that was so delicate, had to be handled, and I thought that Gene Taylor handled it great. He stuck to his guns. He made a hire that may not have been the most popular hire, but it was a hire that he trusted his skills. He trusted his instincts on that. And so far, it looks like his instincts are better than the fans. That's why he's the GM. That's why he's the athletic director, and we're just fans. You got to give him credit for that. And what he's done is, like you said, with the other programs, continuing with the new soccer program, being able to help the continuation of building that women's soccer team has been very impressive. With the baseball team, a hire of a new coach that seems to, as you mentioned, kind of bring some spunk to the baseball team, almost give them a bit of a rejuvenation, possibly there, and continuing his efforts with the facilities and continuing his efforts in a handful of these different areas. Has been impressive, and look, he's done a good job from the financial situation. He's had the donors, continue to donate. That's a big part of it. That's a big part of these expansion projects, and just done a really nice job with that. I think K-State's really lucky to have a guy like Gene Taylor, and he seems like someone who's really committed to K-State, and I think that's another thing that's important, because I just don't get that feel that he's looking at K-State like John Curry. It's like a stepping stone. I think that he's committed. So, done a great job. Really happy with what he's done. And look, time will still tell. We still have to wait and see, what happens in the coming years, especially with football. But, I think the football, the whole football situation from Bill Snyder to Chris Kleiman has been mighty impressive for him, and you got to give him a ton of credit for that.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 9 of the Purple Project Podcast, rolling along. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, Purple Project Podcast, K-State Athletics. Yeah, that's the big thing, football, and he's done so far. I mean, we'll see down the road, especially with what happens here in the COVID year here down the line coming up here. Well, as we talk currently here on tonight's podcast, Alex. But yeah, he's definitely done a good job here. Real quick before we train, I'm gonna throw a change up in the lineup here before we close things out. So yeah, Gene Taylor, number 2 in the Big 12. And then I'm just going to reel off the top 5 because the second half doesn't really matter. But Mac Rhodes from Baylor, number three, and they're gonna have a they're gonna have their hands full with their new coach after with Matt Rhule took off for Carolina. They have Jeff Long, our rival from KU, at number four. And oh, by the way, the grade on that for Gene Taylor was an A minus there for him, which was good. And then last but in the fifth spot, our Farmageddon buddies, Iowa State, Jamie Pollard there for Iowa State.
The Kings of 7-5. Yes.
Yep. 7-5, 8-5, 8-4, yeah. Yep, that's for sure. So yeah, we'll have to monitor what Gene Taylor does, not only for the rest of this year, but in the upcoming years to come. So it definitely he and Chris Klieman have definitely brought back some more of that excitement that we've been missing for football for the last couple of years. So definitely wanted to tie that in a bow and transition. I'm gonna throw a change up on you, Alex, here. Originally, I put running backs on the list, but the last K-State topic tonight, I want to talk about Dean Wade. So Dean Wade, of course, he played in G League this past year for the Cleveland Cavaliers in the G League affiliated in Canton, Ohio with the Canton Charge. Well, Cavaliers decided he played so well that let's keep him, let's sign him up for a multi-year contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers from the general manager, Kobe Altman, announced earlier this week. This was back on Monday. This is huge for, obviously, Barry Brown was in the G League this year as well, but Dean Wade, my man. Obviously, there's a lot of, when he came to K-State, there was a lot of tension on this dude to put up big numbers, and obviously, we know the story, injury-riddled career. Unfortunately, you know, we couldn't have him, even though we went deep in the Elite Eight run, that fantastic, well, fun and fantastic Elite run a few years ago there. But Dean Wade making a name for himself in the G League, he definitely earned a spot with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And of course, to rattle off some stats here, he appeared in 12 games for the G League, averaging 62%, and then of course 50% from three-point range, where he can make his money right there. And he made his debut again in the G League against the New York Knicks back in November 18th, where he only played 9 minutes and had his best game against the LA Clippers January 14th. That feels like century ago now, but
yeah.
Collecting season high in points, rebounds, and blocks. He had 6 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 blocks in 14 minutes. We've seen Dean Wade shine in the G League this past season. And when I think back to him when he was here at K-State, and yes, I was here when he was a freshman and sophomore, if I'm correct on that. But I mean, the potential obviously was there because he came from a small town in St. John, Kansas, where I know another good friend of mine that's from that same area, a good golf player. And the potential was there, but he was very inconsistent. He had this and that. He'll show up one game, and then he'll be missing the next game. But yeah, man, all of a sudden, the potential, when healthy, I mean, he's showing out there, so it makes me wonder, you know, it's what if. I mean, if there's any regrets from Dean Wade, it makes you what if, because he was sometimes hesitant when he had an open shot. He would pass it off to Barry Brown or Kamau Stokes or whatever team that was available. He was afraid to shoot that shot, but we saw he was a very aggressive his senior year, and it just makes me wonder if we had a healthy Dean Wade in the tournament, his senior year, his tournament. Might have been the tournament run might have been a way different. I think it was UC Irvine that we played against there, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me on that, but
yep.
I mean, the outcome could have been much different because we have him on the floor because he was a big difference maker for the Cats.
So I do have to say, whenever I think of Dean Wade, I always think of, you're right, what if? This is like the first thing that comes into your mind, because he was so talented, but you're right. He lacked some consistency. Not consistency, that's not the right word. He lacked confidence, at times, and then he couldn't stay healthy. So I feel like if Dean, if Dean stayed healthy, his number would be in the rafters one day. I do fully believe that as a Kansas kid, if he could have stayed healthy, I think K-State beats, I believe it was Loyola, Chicago. They played in the Elite Eight after Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
So, I could be wrong, but I think if they have a healthy Dean Wade there, they may have a shot there to get to the Final Four. So, the Kansas bred kid leading you to the Final Four, that may be, that may have been something that we could have seen. And then the senior year, if he could have made that tournament run, I think that they would have beaten Irvine. I could be wrong, but I think that they would have. It was a close game without him. I can't remember who it was in the next round, but it was there was an upset. So they would have played, I believe, a 12 seed in that second round. And I can't remember who it is off the top of my head, but I think they would have beat him with Dean Wade. Not knowing who it was, I think K-State would have beaten him. I think they would have made the Sweet 16. At that point, they would have had a matchup, I believe, with Virginia. And so I don't know if they would have beaten Virginia there or not. But I think that they could have made a couple. Point being, I think they could have made a couple deep runs, runs.
Yeah,
deep in there, and that would have, people would have viewed him totally different than they.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I still think Dean has a really good view. I just think that a lot of people wonder, oh man, what if he stayed healthy? Man, what if we had Dean Wade in one of those two tournament runs that we made? You just wonder what if, especially with that team, Dean's junior year, because they made the Elite Eight to, without him. I know he played a little bit in that Kentucky game, but he was virtually a non-factor in it. So I think he only had 2 points. So
I think he had. I think he had either 4 or 6 points. I think he.
For six, okay. I remember he made one little jumper in the corner, and I didn't remember another one off the top of my head. So maybe they don't beat Kentucky without him, because they did only one by two. So but either way, point being, you still wonder, what would have happened if you have Dean Wade not with a fractured foot or whatever he had, then the same foot injury bugging him. His year after, and then we also know that Cardi had some injury issues as well, so that also could probably contributed to his senior year. But either way, super happy for Dean. Moral of the story: he has done a tremendous job since he's gone to Cleveland. He has torn it up in the D League. Well, it started before that. Started in the summer league. He was a beast in the summer league. I remember last summer, and I just saw him on highlight reel after highlight reel. And then, same thing in G League. He went to the G League, and I just saw him in highlight reel after highlight reel. And then, when he did get his opportunities, because he was on a two-way contract, so he could play G League, and he also could play with the Cavs, which is a great accomplishment in and of itself. But then when he got through opportunities, he took advantage of them with Cleveland. And so, when he was in for those 9 minutes or whatever it might have been, he took advantage of it, and he was a difference maker on the court. So, it's so happy to see him get that respect and get that opportunity. He deserves it. He's a great, great guy. He busts his tail, and man, for all the injuries that he has gone through, it killed him. It killed him, the fact that he did not get to make a tournament run with K-State. Mm-hmm. one of those 2 years. And so for him to actually get some good luck, some good luck for once, and be able to stay healthy and get an NBA multi-year contract. Couldn't be any happier for him. Right there from small St. John, Kansas. That's a great deal. It's a great deal. I'm so happy for him. And I look forward to seeing what he can do. Because in my opinion, I could be wrong, but if he stays healthy, got to put that caveat there. But if he stays healthy, I think that he can be a nice role player in the NBA. I think he could have a career as a role guy. Maybe not a starter, maybe not some big splashy thing, but I definitely think he could play maybe a Rodney Magruder type role that he plays with the Clippers. You know, he's made a career of that. So, you know, kudos to Dean. Best of luck to him. And while we're on it, you know, you're right. Barry Brown was in the G League before all this stuff came up as well. So, you know, hopefully maybe Barry Brown can get some luck like that as well and end up on an NBA contract as too. But just it's just great to see it. I tweeted out immediately and just my excitement for Dean when I saw it on Monday. And we'll continue to watch from afar.
Yeah, just to read off some of the stats here, while Dean Wade was here in Manhattan, Kansas, of course, he was part of that wonderful senior class that posted an overall record of 88-51. That's a over 60% winning record, which included just over 50% in conference play. Of course, we advanced to three NCAA tournaments, won a share of the Big 12 title. Back in 18-19 season there, 88 wins. Alex was tied for sixth most by a class in school history. You brought Rodney Magruder, Alex. Well, Dean finished 10th on an all-time scoring list with 1,510 points there. While, you know, he was just one of three players, well, joining Magruder and Bob Boozer, who played back in 1956-59 there, to rank in the top 10 both in scoring and rebounding. Finished among career top 10 in several categories, talking about Dean Wade, folks here on the Pro Project Podcast, including scoring, rebounding, double-digit scoring games, field goals made, starts. Of course, he had 123 starts, according to what I read on K-State Online. And then, of course, the big numbers right here. He, the only player in school history with at least 1,000 points, 100 three-point field goals, 500 rebounds, 200 assists, and 100 steals. Goodness gracious. Yeah, you talk about what if. I mean, I said, hey, man, yeah, I mean, we got to think about, man, what if he would have stayed healthy? I mean, injuries, it happens, and whether it's basketball, football, baseball, track, whatever you're competing in, but if he would have stayed healthy, man, we're talking something else here.
We are, but it just amazes me, and I think that a lot of people, we sit here and we think, oh, well, you know, what if? Well, what if? I mean, well, think about it. Think of all the stats that you just rounded off of what he still did, and think about the amount of wins that he had there, 88. Tournament appearances, 3. Elite Eight run, Big 12 title. All this still happened. So, you know, while we're like, oh, man, what if with Dean? They still accomplished, like, a ton with Dean. And so, you know, I almost think it's not even fair to sit there and think what if, and I will still continue to wonder that. Despite the what if questions, he accomplished so much in his time at K-State. And when he came in to K-State as a freshman, if someone told you, okay, Dean's going to have this many points, this many rebounds, this many threes, this many starts, this many tournament appearances, and Elite Eight run and a Big 12 title, will you take it? I would have been like, oh my gosh, yes, and let's put his number up in the rafters right now. So he still accomplished a ton at K-State.
Yeah, yes, he did. So, yeah, and kind of to bounce off the Cardi, we brought Cardi, Dean and Cardi, there are two different stories there. Obviously, we talked about Cardi in the early episodes of the Pro Project Podcast, and we might go back to that at some point. There are two different roads there. Dean Wade had injury problems, and Cardi, I mean, he could have been that guy, man, to lead to the basketball team, but too many issues with that. I don't want to talk about that too much. That's going to be for another episode, obviously. So
I do have to say, I still have that Final Four itch, because I got the two Elite Eights. We got to the one with Poland, Clemente, that group, and we got to the Elite Eight with Barry, X, and Cam, and that group. But Butler and Loyola prevented us from going to the final. Butler, think about that. Butler and Loyola, not a Power 5 school, those two schools prevented K-State from going to a Final Four two different times. Oh my gosh, Eddie, I do have a little Final Four itch. So, look, Bruce, I know that's asking for a lot, especially coming off of
too much.
That was last year. Not very pretty, but I still have that Final Four itch. I don't know if I'll ever see it. It's really hard to get there. Texas Tech proved that same year, because in my opinion, K-State was absolutely as good as that Texas Tech team that went to the national title. They proved that if you get hot at the right time, you can get there.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and I think it's going to be a while, Alex. I think we're
probably
it's going to be a while.
Probably wishful thinking.
Yeah, wishful thinking. It's going to be a while, son, before we. I mean, it's all going to be depending, and this is, again, we'll be talking about a lot more of this basketball team here in future episodes of Triple P, but yeah, I mean, another young team, we've talked about it. If you missed out on any of that content, check out the Purple Project podcast and download those episodes right there for you guys if you're looking for listening to more Wildcat content. But yeah, another young team, a couple more transfers to other schools. Yeah, we're gonna be in for another long year. It's like you said earlier, to kind of close out this topic here, a while back, I mean, a couple weeks ago, I mean, it's all about how these young guys, this good recruiting class, how they develop here. And obviously with this COVID stuff and not getting that critical practice time to gel with one another, I think it's gonna be key. So we're just gonna have to see moving forward, but yeah, it's gonna be a minute.
And look, I'm not gonna get greedy. My football team has Patrick Mahomes, and my football team just won the Super Bowl, and my baseball team just won the World Series 5 years ago. So I will not get too greedy. I have a couple championships, and I have, in my opinion, the best NFL player, who is only 24. So I'm going to bite my lip on the Final Four thing and be grateful for whatever we get, because I'm still a lucky sports fan.
yep, and we're definitely going to talk Chiefs on here as well as we move along. But actually, speaking of Royals, and this is going to close out the podcast tonight, the Pro Project Podcast, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, calling from San Diego, California, K-State Athletics, and what's going on here in the community. Kansas City Royals, baseball, finally getting back, resuming activity here, and here, I believe either next week or the week after, I'm not really sure, spring training will resume, and then the season will start here in late July, Alex, and obviously yep. The Braves working out at their home stadium at Truist Park, and then obviously, I'm not a Royals fan, but we'll talk Royals on here anyway. So, all right, so Alex, you know the lay of the land, obviously. This team last year had, you know, I mean, obviously they had a couple of good young players, obviously with the loss of Salvi last year, kind of hurt.
Yep.
But, you know, kind of talk about a little bit to wrap the podcast, you know, give us for the non-Royals fans, obviously we're probably going to have Royals fans on listening to this podcast, but for the Royals fans, for the non-Royals fans that listen to this podcast, give us kind of a preview. So what to expect in spring training for the KC Royals?
So as we mentioned multiple times, we are recording this on a Friday. So today was the first full practice. Players reported to the facility on Wednesday, and they got their COVID-19 tests. They got their physicals. They went through their conditioning tests and all those types of things. And then they got had optional BP and pitching and things like that, and so they did that Wednesday, Thursday. Today they actually hit the field for their first official practice today, and you talked about the Braves and kind of how they are going to be playing 10 games against everybody in the NL East, and then they'll have 4 games against everybody who's in the AL East.
Yep.
Grant, we do not know yet with Toronto, because there's the whole border exemption. Will they even be able to get to the U.S. and play? I don't know
about that yet.
we'll see what happens with that. But with the Royals, Devils, they will, it's the same type of deal. They'll have 10 games against each team in the AL Central, and then they will have 4 games against everybody who is in the NL Central. So, look, that's a pretty favorable schedule, because AL Central is not a terribly difficult division. You're not going to be having to go up against the Yankees, against the Red Sox, against the Astros. You know, you're not going to have to be going up in the NL against the Dodgers or anything like that. So, look, you know, heck, you're not going to go up against the Braves, a team that is clearly up and coming. So, you know, I am thinking, you know what? You know, you got a relatively favorable schedule. You're playing a shortened season. All it takes is one hot streak to possibly be able to put yourself in a position to get into the playoffs. Now, I don't think that the Royals will make the playoffs. Just to make it clear right now, okay? That is not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is I think they'll be playing meaningful baseball for a majority of the year. So that's exciting. That's exciting. I think the Royals are close. I think that in a couple of years they can be back to being able to legitimately contend for playoff positioning and things like that. They have a really good young group that they're really starting to draft and build together. So I'm excited about them. And they got a lot of players that are on that major league roster now that I think will be an integral part in the next wave. You know, just to mention it, Jorge Soler, he led the majors, or maybe with the majors, but he led the AL at home run last year. He's a young guy. He could possibly be something. Alberto Mondesi and Hunter Dozier look like they could be two really good players as well. And then you look at some of the guys they drafted. Bobby Witt Jr. looks like he could be a beast when he gets up to the pros. He looks, some people, you'll know this, people compare, say he's a once in a generational type talent, and he just compared a lot to Chipper Jones. So, put in perspective of the type of player that Bobby Witt could possibly be for the final. Yeah. So, and then you're obviously going to have Salvi coming back. You know, you'll have Alex Gordon back as well. He actually had a nice year last year. So, you know, I think the Royals actually have some nice pieces offensively to make some noise. What I think their biggest issue is going to be is pitching. I don't think that they got the depth there to be able to essentially hold teams down enough, especially a team like the Minnesota Twins, who led the majors in homers last year. You have to face them 10 times. That could be pretty problematic. But the Royals have a ton of good young pitching prospects that they're hoping will be able to come up in the next couple of years and essentially kind of close that gap in. And then they're hoping, you know, hey, we get these young pitching prospects and we can get them pitching well. And then we get Bobby Witt Jr. up here. Then we got something really nice there. And I think that they could. I know the last couple of years have been difficult for Royals fans to swallow. For me, it's been a little easier to swallow because I got a World Series poster that's on my, not poster, I guess a World Series picture, that's up on my wall that reminds me every day that they won the World Series in 2015. So that keeps me going. I understand that it's a process. I understand how it's a small market, how small market baseball goes. You know, you've got to draft well, you've got to develop well, and you've got to hit on those picks, and you've got to take advantage of when they're in the big leagues, which is what the Royals successfully did with Moose and Haas, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, that group. So, you know, for them, they're just kind of in that rebuilding stage, but I think this is going to be a fun year of Major League Baseball, because, Eddie, here's how I view it, and I know that we've gone a little long, but here's how I view it. It's going to be kind of like March Madness, because baseball it's a sport where any team can beat any team on any given day. Mm. Heck, the Baltimore Orioles can go into the Bronx and they can beat the Yankees 3 games in a row. And we wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, that's so crazy. No, we wouldn't think that because we know every team is capable of going and winning a series anywhere. Right. That's just the way baseball is. So when you shorten that season to 60 games, you are opening it up for a total March Madness. Somebody gets hot, they make a run, and they could make that run all the way because the season's only 60 games. Uh-huh. And everyone's like, oh, that's a lot. In baseball, 60 games is not a lot. That is a relatively small sample size right there. So, you know, it really takes, in my opinion, anywhere from 90 to 100 games for things to start evening out in baseball, or maybe 80 to 100 games, because last year, the winner of the World Series was the Washington Nationals. If we played 60 games last year, the Nationals wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Hell no.
Yeah, they had a losing record after the first 60 games. So that just kind of puts in perspective how crazy this thing could get. I think that they ran the numbers and looked at the playoffs last year. The playoffs would have been totally different if it was on the first 60 games. And there were multiple teams that would have been in and out that were different. It's going to be crazy. It's going to have kind of a March Madness feel. The games are going to mean a lot more because there's only 60. And I'm really excited for it. I'm just nervous that one big old bugaboo, COVID-19, rear its head and ruin it all. And so, fingers crossed that does not happen. Because I actually think that this is something. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what a 60-game season is going to look like. I'm curious to see this whole kind of March Madness type of feel to baseball. And there's also some rule changes. You know, in extra innings, Eddie, they're going to start them with a runner at second base and nobody out for each team to try to essentially the goal of it is we don't want games going 17, 18, 19 innings because these rosters might be depleted with players who have COVID. And they may not have the bodies to do that. So we want to be able to speed the game up. So this is what we're doing. Well, I think that's going to be interesting. Okay. Let's see. There's a little extra wrinkle I didn't think of. You know, let's see how that goes. You know, the MLB can kind of experiment with some things and see how it works. I mean, this is just kind of like, hey, we're here. We're in this odd spot. So let's embrace it. Let's do some stuff we wouldn't have done otherwise. I think that's one of the rules. So I'm really looking forward to the season. And more than anything, my gosh, Eddie, can we get sports back, please? I need them. I need sports. I haven't seen them since March. It's July. I'm a sports fanatic, and so are you. And so, granted, we do have NASCAR, and that's good. I've been watching them. By the way, there have been some great NASCAR races. I just want to say there have been some really, really good ones, and it was it wasn't Pocono. It was the one before Pocono. Where there was like a tenth of a car
Talladega
race. You obviously know this. You drive a podcast. So we do have some things out there, and women's soccer began up, but I'm ready for baseball, basketball, to get those going. Baseball, basketball, football. Come on, baseball. That's my plea. I'm excited about it. I am excited. Excited to get the season underway. I'm excited for that. And, there's going to be no minor league baseball. So that's also going to be another little interesting wrinkle. You could have some expanded rosters where you might be able to have some prospects on your team that you weren't planning on being there otherwise. Like, I'm not saying Bobby Witt will be on the Royals roster this year, but it's a possibility. Because there's no minor leagues. So, and he never would have been on this year's roster. So, it's an interesting time. It's an interesting time.
Yeah, so, definitely going to be interesting to see. We're pretty much out of time. I got fireworks going off outside of my house as I speak right now. It's already starting early here in Madden, Kansas, so, in my neighborhood. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. We'll have more discussions about it. Going off the different direction here from K-State. But yeah, it'll be definitely interesting, and I'm going to probably say it again multiple times. I cannot emphasize here real quick to emphasize the important start of getting off to a fast start, because if you don't, you're going in serious trouble. So
You're practically done. As I mentioned, one hot streak can do it. One bat, one gold streak will put a fork in you. Yeah. So, you cannot go on 7, 8, 9, 10 game losing streaks. You just can't do it. Your season's going to be over. But I will say, the Braves, I think they can make a lot of noise, Eddie. I think they can make a lot of noise. That's a good, young baseball team that I think that is possibly primed to make some noise in the short season.
Yeah, I think we have the roster, we have the depth to do that. So, I mean, we're definitely ready to, we've been ready to take that next step for the last couple of years. Unfortunately, we've fallen short. I mean, the year before last year, we weren't expected to make it, to win the division. We win the division, and we went up against the mighty Dodgers. Then last year, I thought this was going to be the year, and then we ran into the St. Louis Cardinals, and then the whole nightmare. Oh, don't get me started, but
that was bad.
But yeah, don't open those wounds. But hey, man, it's all about the process. And the Braves, Alex, we are knocking on that door. We're getting close. We're very close, really. So
they're right there. They're on the front door, like the Royals were in 2014.
Yeah, so definitely anxious to get back and make hopefully a deeper run and get back to the NLCS and hopefully get back hungry to get back to that World Series, like you've been talking about all show long.
Yep. I definitely think they got the team to do it. I definitely think they do. The Dodgers are obviously a hurdle, but they can't seem to win the big one. So I don't know what it is, but they're the best team like every year, and for some reason they just can't get it done. So I think the door's open there for the Braves. They got the talent, and they're young, and they're gonna keep getting better. So.
Yep, that is correct. Wow, this has been another jam-packed episode of the Purple Project Podcast. Alex, that time again, where can everybody find you on social media?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter. Personal Twitter is at AFACHTEN. The professional Twitter is at Alex_ITRC. On the personal Twitter, it'll be more of the personal hot takes. And the professional Twitter will be a little more of what I'm working on in the professional world. And just to give you a little nugget on that, I tweeted out. The last thing on the professional Twitter was actually a story that my company did with NBC7 San Diego here in San Diego, where we talked about a privacy law that is now being implemented, how people can actually protect their information there. So, you know, there's just stuff like that that you can find on the professional Twitter. And then if you want to see Alex just saying outlandish things where he's thinking for like 5 seconds before he tweets it, then just go check out the personal Twitter. And it's right there for that stuff. So anyway, that's where you can find me.
You can find me on Twitter as well at Eddie_EG3. And Alex mentioned I have a podcast about NASCAR. I do. Yep, it is the 3Wide NASCAR Podcast, EG3. You can catch that weekly on the same podcast you find on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, iHeartRadio, and our newest edition, radio.com. So, yep, you can find it there as well. Alex, this has been a good show. We'll do it again next week.
I look forward to it, man. Thank you so much. Have a good 4th of July.
Have a good 4th of July, sir. And that's going to wrap things up for the Purple Project Podcast this week here in Manhattan, Kansas. That's Alex from San Diego. I'm Eddie. This has been the Purple Project Podcast, episode number 9. We will talk to you next time on the Purple Project Podcast. Until then, we're out. And don't forget, here come them cats. We'll talk to you next time. We'll be right back.
Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.